Again, welcome to the Holy Dham of New Dwarka, ISKCON Temple of Los Angeles. It's a pleasure for us to meet with you, to greet with you, and to share with you these wonderful teachings, glorious teachings that Srila Prabhupada has brought from India, and which has transformed and transfixed so many lives, enabling them to live happy lives, fulfilled lives, satisfied lives. Tonight's topic of my discourse will be how to rise from misery to ecstasy. And for those of you who may be watching over the internet, I'm speaking from the Bhagavad Gita, the 5th chapter, the 21st verse. So we can begin with our Jaya Radha Madhava. How many of us know the Jaya Radha Madhava song? Now raise your hand so I can see how many. Okay, so when we sing Jaya Radha Madhava, we don't have to be timid. We don't have to be worried about speaking or singing too loud. Krishna is used to hearing thunderous singing. So I will bid you all to let it all out. If you've been meaning to shout or scream or yell during the week, but you were too constrained due to the environment or the circumstances, now is the time, and you can let it all out to Krishna as a way of saying, you are important to me, Krishna. You are so valuable, and you are so lovable. So we can let Krishna know that by the strength, by the intensity, by the focus of our singing.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Ranjana. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Ranjana. 야토란난다나브드잔나랑진어야무나티라반나차리야무나티라반나차리 Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Channa Vallabha Grivara Tari Jaya Gopi Channa Vallabha Grivara Tari Yasoda Nandana Abhuti Channa Rangina Yatoda nandana bhuja jana ranjana Yamna tera vana chari Yamna tera vana chari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada.
Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivijaka Acharya. Ask the Tora Sattva Shri Srimad His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakudi Vaishnava Rinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Premsagahu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunyatyananda Shri Arvaita, Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gouda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga, old Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Again, reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 21. I'll read the Sanskrit first, and then I'll read the translation and the purport. In fact, we'll be able to read the translation together. Vaya sparshesh vasaktatma vinyat yatmani yatsukham sa brahma yoga yuktatma sukham ashayam astute.
Translation. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme Lord. So, please repeat. Such a liberated person, is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Yamunacharya, a great devotee in Krishna consciousness, said, so these are all Sanskrit words, Yad avadi mama chetaha Krishna padadavinde nava nava rasa damanyudyatam rantam asit tad avadi bata nari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara sushtu nishti vanamcha, which means, quote, since I have been engaged in transcendental loving service of Krishna, I'll repeat that. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Is that possible? Well, I will explain why that happened to him. A person in Brahma Yoga or Krishna consciousness is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he loses his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. The highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell. And a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. That is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. They're going in two different directions. One is going to the material world, one is going to the spiritual world. A Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure due to his being a liberated soul. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I opened offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet and pray for his blessings that I may say something beneficial and useful, and pray for all your blessings and all your prayers that I may say something beneficial for all of us so that we can all, at the end of this talk, feel even more or greater motivated to want to achieve the goal of self-realization and God-realization. So from the very outset, some of us may be having some doubts or some curiosity. This sage who has been quoted here, Yamunacharya, he said when he thinks of sex, his lip curls up in distaste. Well, why should that be? The only reason that could be is he found something better, something greater, something higher, something more delicious. Let me give you a practical or materialistic example which may serve to give some idea of what he is going through or as a result of his experience in Krishna consciousness. How many of us have ever eaten stale bread? Raise your hand. I want to get some idea. Not too many.
Stale bread is very hard, and you can break your teeth on it if it really gets hard enough and you try to chew on it. But the longer bread stays, the harder it gets. And if you try to taste it after you chew into this hard bread, you can hardly taste anything. But if you keep chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing, you will begin to get an iota, a little smidgen of taste. A little bit of sweetness will come out. So, Yamunacharya is comparing sex life to this little bit of sweetness that we get in the stale bread. And what he is saying is, how many of us have tasted bread which is virtually right out of the oven? And you... one person? Okay, many of us have tasted bread out of the oven. Before you even taste it, you smell it. And when you smell it, you just want to just dive into it. It's such an encouraging and such a engaging smell, taste. And when you taste it, it's just so delicious that you don't want to stop at one slice. You want to go to a second slice and maybe even a third, especially if you have some nice things to put on it. So that's what has happened to this particular sage. He's saying that his previous pleasures of the material life were inconsiderable, unimportant, not very intense, certainly not in comparison to his experience in pure devotional love and service. This is what he's talking about. Now, what is pure devotional love and service? Pure devotional love, and so first of all, devotional love, devotion means selfless affection and ardent dedication. This is what devotion is. And when it's selfless, it means you do it without any particular motivation to get something back, tangible or palpable, something you can hold on to. So when it's selfless, you do it simply because it gives pleasure in simply doing it, and that is because it's being done for whom? For the Supreme Lord. So selfless affection and ardent dedication is what devotional service is. So he was practicing pure devotional service, not wanting anything in return, just offering whatever he had, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, do it for me. And if you do it for me, I will bless you. And that blessing will be felt in the heart. And when you feel the blessing in the heart, you will feel a joyfulness. You will feel a thrill. You will feel a flutter. Your hairs on your arms or your neck may go up. You may tremble. Your eyes may open wide, or your eyes may tear. These are some of the indications or symptoms of God's reciprocation with his devotee when he is pleased by his devotee's love, his devotee's devotion. So that pleasure takes place here in the heart, and it spreads from the heart throughout the body. Whereas the sexual pleasure takes place in the genital part, and it lasts only for a very short time. The pleasure that Yamunacharya Prabhu is talking about is an ongoing pleasure, not a pleasure that ends with in a minute or 2 minutes or 5 or even 10 minutes, half hour. It's ongoing. It's like an underground spring. We all know about the underground, the springs that are underground, and they're always flowing. When you dig down, you see that there's the water and it's moving. So similarly, when this underground spring of the water of bhakti means devotional love. When that underground spring is flowing, what happens is that one begins to feel the joy, the strength, the peace, the ecstasy of contact with the Supreme Lord. And this spring gets bigger and bigger, the greater our love for Krishna becomes. So let me talk a little about this in particular. So as I mentioned here, Is everybody clear on this point? Because I'll take questions at the end. The point that's being made here is that one pleasure is very minuscule, tiny, and that is material pleasure. And it's short-lived. It doesn't last for long. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and the wise person does not delight in them. So what does a wise person delight in? He delights in permanent pleasure, and that's what we're really all seeking. When our pleasure ends, whatever it may be, from music or something we see, you see a beautiful sunrise, beautiful sunset, you don't want it to end. You want to keep looking at it. But then as the sun sets, it goes down, and you see all these beautiful phosphorescent colors and orange and greens and blues. And you just want to keep looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. And then it's gone. And then night comes. And it's good. It was a short-lived experience. So what we want is we want our pleasure to be continuous. And do you know why? Because that is our real nature, is to be always enjoying. Our real nature is to be always blissful. Our real nature is to be always to be enraptured. And that's because the soul itself, in Sanskrit the words, its nature is Sat Chit Ananda. Sat means eternality. Chit means knowledge. And Anand means bliss. Eternality, knowledge, and bliss. And that is the nature of God. And we are all parts and parcels of God. Every one of us. It's very much like if you think of the sun and you think of all of its rays coming out. So we, each and every one of us, is like one of the rays. And we are all connected to the original source, the sun. So by extension, if you're a ray, and you're a ray, and I'm a ray, and he's a ray, and she's a ray, well then, we're all connected to the original source, well what does that make us? It makes us all brothers and sisters. We're all connected to the same Father, the same One, the same Source. So when a person is Krishna conscious, he is aware always of his relationship with God. And being aware of his relationship with God, he's aware of his relationship with all living beings. And just if you have a brother or you have a sister, you feel some affection, you feel love, you feel kindness, you feel sweetness towards him or her. Similarly, you feel that same type of feeling towards all living beings and all creatures. Because all creatures also are souls, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, although some of these lower creatures do not have the intelligence of a human being. For it is only in the human form of life that one gets an opportunity to overcome all of the miseries that he is naturally inherited, and which he created actually, and which can be overcome, and ultimately leave the material world and go back to the eternal spiritual world. So, what is the cause of our miseries? This is a question that comes up. Why should we even be miserable? I have just said that originally we are all Krishna-conscious living entities. Souls. But the soul is covered over. For example, if you have a glass of light, and you put a dark cover over the glass, well, you don't know there's light there. And that's exactly what has happened. Originally, we were all Krishna-conscious living entities living in the eternal world. That was our original home. At some point in eternity, we decided that we wanted to feel what it was like, experience what it was like to be Krishna. Krishna is the Lord. Krishna is God. Krishna is the creator. Krishna is the knower. Krishna is the lover. Krishna is the all in all. Everyone glorifies him in the spiritual world. Everyone adores him, applauds him, and most of all, serves him and loves to serve him. But in the spiritual world, all are not equal. They're all equal as souls, but they are not equal in their love for Krishna. Some love Krishna extremely so much so that they can't they can't exist for a moment without thinking of Krishna, and they don't want to. And as soon as they don't see Krishna, or they're not thinking of Krishna, they begin to weep, they begin to cry, because they want to have that loving association with Him. And there are others in the spiritual world who also, they glorify Krishna, they honor Krishna, they serve the Lord, but their love for Krishna is not so intense, not so so binding to Krishna. So, all living entities have independence. Krishna allows us to love Him or not love Him. He never forces anybody. In the eternal world, the spiritual world, Krishna does not go around to all of His devotees and say, "You've got to love me, you better love me, or it's going to be punishment for you. You must love me, and you too, love." He doesn't do that. You want to love me? Fine. You don't want to love me? You don't want to serve me? I got another place for you. And you know where that place is? Right here. That's our place. So, when we no longer want to serve the Lord, but want to feel what it's like, taste what it's like, experience what it's like to be a Lord, well, then you can't stay in the eternal world anymore, because that world is for persons who want to serve Krishna. They want to adore Krishna. They want to think of Krishna. They want to focus on Krishna. They want to speak about Krishna, sing about Krishna, dance to Krishna. All they want to do is just... And why do they want to do this? Because it's ever increasingly blissful. It's ecstatic. It's not like they're just doing it just for the sake of doing it. But there's something coming to them. Because the more you associate with Krishna, the more you... connect with Krishna. As Krishna says, one who is not connected with me in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So they connect with Krishna, and the result is they feel so happy within. That is our natural constitutional position. That is why we want to be happy always. And when we are in the eternal spiritual world, we are happy always. But happiness, as I already said, is in different levels, different degrees. For example, Radharani, her love for Krishna is so intense that it's inconceivable. And the love of her girlfriends for Krishna is also inconceivable. But they're all not on the same level of love. So when we... Because our love for Krishna is not so strong, not so intense, not so great, we no longer want to serve Him, but want to experience what it's like to be a Krishna, to be a Lord, to be a director, to be a manager, to be a master, to be a dictator, to be the one who calls the shots, as we say, then we're no longer qualified or fit to live in the eternal world. It's over. This is the world that has been created for persons who want to compete with Krishna. And in other words, forget God and try to be a Lord. So everyone gets an opportunity in some degree or another. For example, if you're a parent, you have a child, the child is learning to walk, or the child is going to school. So you can tell the child, you know, no, don't do that. No, do it this way. No, don't put your hand over there. No, stop. You can tell, don't. You're a master. You're a Lord. You're a Krishna. Even small Krishna, but a Krishna. Because what is the child going to do? The child is helpless. The child is looking for direction. Besides, you're the one who feeds and clothes and shelters the child. So therefore, you have someone who's looking up to you. So you get that chance. Of course, when we again take it a little bit further, we may have a job, and the job may develop into an executive position. And from an executive position, you're overseeing maybe 5 or 10 or 20 or 50 people. And it may go on. You may become one of the chief executive officers of a large company, in which case you make policies which will affect thousands of people. So this is a form of control, okay? This is a form of dictation. For example, you decide on a policy, and if people in the company, they don't want to follow the policy, you have the right to dismiss them. Give them their walking papers, as they say, or lay them off. So that's power. That's being a Krishna. Krishna has all power. He's making all the sun come up every day, and it going down, and the moon is rising, and all the millions and billions of universes and stars and meteors that you see in the sky every night, that's all due to the creativity of Krishna. That's power. We can never compete or compare with anything like that. And yet in our stupidity and our foolishness, we just want to taste what it's like to say, do this, don't do this, do this, you have to do this, I'm your boss, and don't forget that. Doesn't make much sense. So what happens is that in the course, in the pursuit of trying to be a Krishna, trying to be a leader, trying to be a ruler, we sometimes develop some enemies. People like us, people don't like us, people try to do things against us, so many things. So these things cause us misery. So the important point is that the more you try to gain a position, for example, people compete in the Olympics, people compete for Academy Awards, people compete for basketball awards and football awards and baseball awards, all of these Academy Awards, everybody wants to be number one. Krishna, the leader, the great, the most wonderful. And so what happens is that if you lose, you feel terrible because you were hoping to win. Even though a person may say, oh, it doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter. I really don't care about it. But we do care because we came into this world to win. And everybody wants to be a winner. Nobody likes to be a loser. Loser means insignificant, worthless, useless. That's what, although we like to tell ourselves, no, it doesn't mean that. But it just happens to work out that way. Nobody likes to keep losing and losing and losing because that often leads people to depression, to dejection, to doubt, uncertainty, and sometimes to suicide. Many, many young people are committing suicide these days more than ever before, but they don't know what the purpose of life is. They don't know why they're even going to school. They don't know why they're taking all these subjects which they're not even interested in. Just to, you know, get a degree, and then maybe with the degree you can make more money. But is that an assurance of happiness? Happiness comes from inside, as I mentioned in the verse itself. A liberated person is not attracted to material sense enjoyment, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme Lord. Now, in the course of trying to be Mr. or Miss Big, there is the material energy known as the three modes of nature. How many of us are familiar with this concept, the three modes of nature? Okay, what is the lowest mode? Raise your hand. What's mode of ignorance? Yes, correct. mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance is characterized by generally darkness, laziness, indifference, torpor, uncaringness, thoughtlessness, selfishness. These are all the wonderful qualities of ignorance, which we don't want to acquire, but we get them anyway. And what happens is that the more we perform actions which go against God's will, and how do we know what God's will is? It's right here in this book, the Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's mentioned in the 16th chapter, he who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own will attains neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. Therefore, one should understand what is duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. It's right there in the book. What we should do, what we should not do, all in the Bhagavad Gita. And if you read the Bhagavad Gita regularly, you'll know exactly what Krishna wants of you. And by reading the Bhagavad Gita regularly, it is none different. It is associating with Krishna. And more we associate with Krishna, the purer our mind becomes, the purer our thoughts become, the purer our intelligence becomes, and the purer our consciousness becomes. In other words, it becomes uncontaminated. When the consciousness becomes uncontaminated, you get guidance from Krishna very quickly. It's only a contaminated consciousness that cannot get that guidance because it's always worried about something.
It's always anxious about something. It's always uncertain about something. So it's like a ruffled water. You know, if you look at your face in the ruffled water, you don't see much there except a broken image. But if the water is very pellucid, it's very calm, very tranquil, and you look at you can see your face. But similarly, when the mind is calm, when the mind is controlled, when the mind is serene, it can receive the guidance, the direction from the Supreme Lord, so that we make the decisions which are in our best interest, not decisions which are going to harm us. Excuse me. So you mentioned ignorance was the second. And I've already given the characteristics of it. Remember, lassitude, sloth, indifference, I couldn't care less, get out of my face. That kind of mentality. Now, what's the second one? It has a red color. Passion, yes. And anybody know the Sanskrit word for that? Rajaguna, yes, Rajaguna. So, passion is characterized by activity. And there are different kinds of activities. There are salutary or beneficial activities. And there are also harmful and degrading activities. So, in the mode of passion, though, the general chief characteristic of passion is a desire to outdo someone else. Generally, such persons like to enter contests and beat somebody. Or when you talk to them in conversation, even if you state some truth and they believe the same thing, they will sometimes say, no, no, I don't believe that. Just to be adverse and just to try to win an argument. And I've met a lot of people like that. What do? I walk away. It's a waste of my energy. It's a lose-lose situation, even if you win. All you have is the satisfaction of knowing that you beat him or you defeated her in the argument. And what is the value? If you can go to sleep at night and say, yeah, I really got him. I really got him. Wait till I get him next time. I'll even really cream him. You know. So the person has this kind of a mentality. It's of no value. So passion aims at trying to be bigger, greater, higher, better, superior. And we do it all the time. We do it unconsciously, and we do it consciously. In Krishna consciousness, the goal is we don't have that problem. I'll explain why. And third is the mode of goodness. Now, in the mode of goodness, persons like to do good things. We have people in the medical profession, legal profession, a teaching profession, anywhere where someone is doing something to help another human being be relieved or improve his or her situation. So that's the mode of goodness. And that's a good thing. In order to go higher into what we call pure goodness, which is what I'm talking about tonight, first there must be goodness, the things that I'm mentioning, acquiring the qualities of purity, peacefulness, austerity, honesty, tolerance, patience, carefulness, affection, steadiness, perseverance, patience, all those qualities which are so important for any kind of success, worldly or otherwise. So when a person is in mode of goodness, he generally has many of these qualities. But what happens in the mode of goodness is that when a person is doing many good things, he becomes proud. He thinks, yes, I'm really superior to others who are not doing all these good things. And that pride is not very beneficial because he feels exalted or very happy over the fact that he is in a superior position to others. And in that so-called superior position, he feels that he's better off. And the result is after he dies, he has to come back to this material world to again re-experience those same types of pleasures and experience the miseries which go with that. Now we're going to talk about the miseries. Okay? There are three kinds of miseries. Miseries which come from our old body and mind. Anybody know the Sanskrit word for that? Adiatmaka. Yes. So miseries which come from our own body and mind, adi atmaka. Miseries which come from other living entities, adi bodhika. Yes. And living and miseries which come from the catastrophes or calamities or natural disturbances are called adi daivika. They come from the demigods who visit us. They come in the form of hurricanes, cyclones, snowstorms, like we just had, you know, a few days back in the East Coast, heavy snowstorms, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunamis, floods. All these are what they call natural disturbances. Actually, they're not natural at all. They're unnatural. They're unnatural because they come as a result of our bad karmic actions that we have performed in the past. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that many of these calamities and catastrophes that are coming are the result of persons committing offenses against the deity. As I said, this book tells us what we should do, what we should not do. If we commit offenses against the Lord, offenses against devotees, offenses against non-devotees, just offenses upon an offenses is an action in which a person, another person is harmed or hurt or disturbed or upset or feels put down. Any of this is considered offensive and it has a reaction. For example, a ball, you throw it against the wall. The action is the ball being thrown and the reaction is what? The ball coming back. Okay? So that's action, reaction. Similarly, we throw out energy into the material world in the form of speech, in the form of action with our body, in the form of thoughts. And these, according to what the circumstance, if we harm somebody, the harm will come back to us. If we kill somebody unjustly, if we murder somebody, we will get murdered. If you if you hurt somebody, you create a deliberately set a trap so that a person falls. For example, you have a neighbor and you don't like him or her, and you want him or her to have an accident. So secretly at night, you get a few banana peels. And you put them just on the step where the person's going to step when they step out of the place. And sure enough, he didn't see the banana peels and he's on his back and out for 3 weeks in Bratman Memorial. So that's what happens. So what happens is that person feels, ha, I got him. Now he's out of my sight. I don't have to look at that horrible looking person who's so greedy, who's so stingy, who's so this, who's so that. So you feel good. It's so stupid because you don't realize that the same thing is going to happen to us in some time in the future. Whatever you throw out comes back. So all these catastrophes, calamities, for example, Prabhupada mentioned that as a result of so many millions of cows and bulls being killed on a regular daily basis, these are basically, they're murdered. You don't have to eat meat to live. It's not necessary. I've been a vegetarian for about 55 years now. And I'm not falling apart. I'm doing okay. Going into my, getting out near 83 and still going on. So, I didn't say that to get the applause. I want everybody to know that. But what I'm trying to bring out is that you don't have to eat meat or fish or chicken or any of these things to live healthy, to live strong, to be vigorously full of vitality and full of vigor. You don't have to do that. It's not necessary. But people have somehow been bulldozed into the idea that you won't get your protein, you won't get your this, your niacin, your phosphorus, and your sodium, and your and I have to have it. So what happens is that they build a nice big cancer in the body. Because these foods are not meant for human beings.
puts me in emergencies. But the natural food for human beings is fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and milk and foods which are nourishing and strengthening and vitalizing. So the result of all this killing and killing and killing results in what we call natural or, as I said, unnatural disturbances, calamities. And these calamities, earthquakes, floods, and people are wondering, why is this happening? They don't have a clue. They think it's just accidental, randomly occurring, just happening. It's not happening. It's happening because we're doing something to make it happen. During the time of, you say, well, how can you prove this? During the time of Lord Ramachandra. Oh, how many know about Lord Ramachandra? You've read? Okay, good. So, he's incarnate, one of the incarnations of God. And when he became king, there were none of these so-called catastrophes and calamities. There were none of those things happening because everybody lived according to golden rule, according to virtue. Everyone developed the kind of virtues that are necessary to have a very friendly society in which people think about other people, their needs, their wants, their requirements. So when people think of people, people have that sensitivity. You have a different kind of society. It's not a dog-eat-dog. It's not just a survival mentality. But when persons cultivate and develop virtues, then those virtues result in proper mentality. And a proper mentality means what? It means you make the kind of decisions that will result in positive results. I talked about the ball against the wall. So, what you'll be throwing out and getting back are all useful, beneficial, and helpful. So, therefore, in Krishna consciousness, the best thing we can do is to purify the heart, purify the mind, and purify the consciousness, purify the intelligence. There are 9 different ways of doing this. And it should be done with all your heart and all your soul and all your vigor and intensity. Hearing the holy name of the Lord. Chanting the holy name or the Bhagavatam. Remembering Krishna as often as possible. Not just when we come to the temple. Coming to the temple is supposed to be a springboard for when you go outside so that when you walk in the street, you're by yourself, you just go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare. Every time we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, we are associating with Krishna. So, for example, if I put my hand on something warm, like if he has a warm hand, I have a cold hand, I receive the warmth of his hand. So when I put my mind and my voice on Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, I'm associating with Krishna, and associating with Krishna means associating with all his wonderful, glorious virtues. His love, his warmth, his kindness, his tolerance, his patience, his understanding, his affection, all these things we associate with, and when you associate, just as I said, I absorb the warmth of someone's hand, I absorb the qualities of Krishna. When we have those wonderful, meaningful, purposeful qualities, then when we are confronted by different circumstances, difficulties, trials, tribulations, problems, what do you do? Who should I go to? When you have these virtues, when the mind is calm, when the mind is peaceful, you get the inner guidance as to what you have to do. It's not difficult at all. When we are living in contact with, in association with, in tune with our beloved Lord Sri Krishna. And that's what I'm here for, to encourage everyone to try to remember hearing about the Lord, chanting about the Lord, remembering Krishna, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshipping Krishna, offering prayers to Krishna, practical service to the Lord, serving his lotus feet, offering one's body, one's mind, and one's words to the Lord. Complete surrender to the Lord. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path. So Krishna is ready. He's there with
piles and piles of rewards waiting to be dropped upon us. All we have to do is surrender to Him. Surrender means accept what is favorable, whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. Reject whatever is unfavorable. Somebody says, here, have a drink. Here, take some cocaine. Here, take some... No, thank you. You reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. Depend upon the Lord for whatever is needed. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever... In 1857, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but you act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. That's what I've been talking about this whole 40 minutes or so. So the more we read this Bhagavad Gita, it's a wonderful, great, purifying book. And it's got commentary throughout. Read the book about Krishna, his one amazing pastimes. And you can, if you don't like to read or you don't have time to read, we have these CDs. A lot of them I made of Srila Prabhupada's books. You can get the Krishna book, the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, it's all out there on the table. And if they're out of it, you can order it. Not a problem. So we go from misery to ecstasy by gradually purifying. And through this process of purification, remember I spoke at the beginning that the soul is covered over? So that covering of those three modes, darkness, passion, and goodness, those three modes become dissolved, and the natural propensity to lovingly serve Krishna is awakened and is manifested, and the result of that is that we work for Krishna, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do this as an offering to me, he says. In this way, you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will come to me without a doubt. So Krishna is making guarantees. His guarantee at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage to me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So look at all the promises Krishna is making. All we have to do is follow the instructions of the pure devotee Srila Prabhupada as they have been explained in this wonderful book, the Bhagavad Gita. Join into the kirtans. Come to the temple as often as possible. Make your room a temple. Make your job, wherever you're sitting. Put pictures of Krishna all around. Get your wrist or your arm tattooed with the name Krishna. Yeah, I got it here. I did. After 30 years, I used to take a pen every month. I'm getting tired of this. I'm going to the tattoo artist. So I said, how much will it cost for this little thing? He says, $50. $50 for this? I said, I see guys, they have all of these you know, women that look like fish. What do they call them? Mermaids. Yeah, he said, I'll go up the whole arm for $50. And this you're going to charge? He says, well, you know, it's our minimum. I says, I'm a monk. I can't afford $50 for a little K. He says, well, where are you a monk at? I said, the Hare Krishna place, you know, down a mile away. The Hare Krishna temple. He says, oh, my brother goes there. I says, really? He says, yeah, he goes to your feast. I said, well, then you owe me. All right, I'll take $10 off. He did it for 40. Don't tell him I said so. So, anyway, it's a true story, by the way. Krishna teaches us how to bargain a little bit too. He's the champion trickster of all tricksters. So getting back to the main point,
I'm going to pretty much wrap it up in a little while. I did have a story, but I don't think we have enough time to tell the story. Probably most of you would like to get to the feast. No? Yes? Or you want me to tell the story? You want to hear the story? Okay. All right. It's a very telling and significant little story, and I found it rather amusing. Srila Prabhupada told a lot of different stories about a minister whose name was Birbal. Birbal was a minister to the king known as Akbar, who lived in the Middle Ages in the mid-1500s, going upwards from there. And Birbal was very witty. He was very knowledgeable, very shrewd, very astute. And there was no question, no problem that the king could not get solved by Birbal. And all the courtiers, all the attendants hated him. Because Birbal got a chance, he would sit next to the king. The king would put his arm around him. The king would give him more money, give him gold. So they would just... 10 different shades of grand envy. From the barber was envious, and the sweeper was envious. Everyone was envious of Birbal, and all they wanted to do was to kill him. They couldn't stand the fact that he was so much admired and appreciated by the king. So one day with a barber, he came up with a brainstorm. He figured out a way in which he could get Birbal killed in a very nice way. So, when he was giving a haircut to the king, he said to the king, "Oh, my dear king, I had a dream last night, and your father, who's deceased, dead, he told me that in heaven, he's very bored. There's this nothing to make him laugh, no one to tell good jokes, knowing to liven up the place." And he asked, "Would it be possible to send your minister Birbal, send him up to heaven?" So the king said, "Well, I have to kill him to do that." And he says, "Well, that's what your father," he said, he's dying of boredom, and so all his friends. So Birbal was called in, and he was told the situation. And as soon as Birbal heard about it, he says, "Oh, no problem. I'm happy to go. Just give me 1 week to prepare, okay?" He says, "You're really happy?" "Yeah, I'm happy. I couldn't care less." So he says, "I'll give you the week." So Birbal, what he did is he says, I want to be buried alive." So he went to his house, just outside the house. He wanted to be buried just outside the house. So what he did is he started digging his own grave. And, you know, it was the mounds of dirt were building up and building up. So it was about 6-7 feet down. But no one knew that he was building a tunnel, you see, into his own house, which was right next door. And then up, which would be his bedroom. So the week went by and time came. Everybody got around they couldn't see what was down into the hole because you had all these big pilings there. So Birbal said, "Okay, my king, it's been very, very nice. Was serving you and all of you. It's been my pleasure. I am happy to die. You can start throwing the dirt over as soon as I get down there." So he climbed up the little mound there and then dropped down into the pit. And then the attendants, the shovelers, they started shoveling dirt. Meanwhile, Birbal, he climbed right through the tunnel that he had built and climbed up, got into his room. So they covered it over and then they began chanting, you know, the hymns to the dead and so forth. 6 months went by. Birbal never came out of the room. Of course, he's married. His wife took care of his food and his needs. And his hair was growing longer and longer and longer until it was down to his thighs. And he had long whiskers. You could never recognize Birbal now. So he decided that it was time to meet the king again. So he came out of his house. He walked down the street. Nobody recognized him. And he went into the barber area where the king gets his hair cut. So he saw the barber was cutting and he says, "Excuse me, oh king, it's me, your old minister, Birbal." He said, "Birbal? Birbal's dead." He says, "No, I was sent down from heaven on a mission to tell you something." "Really?" He says, "Yes, really." He said, what is the mission? Well, it's a mission. Look at me. You see all my long, long whiskers, my long hair? Well, there's a problem in heaven. Well, what's the problem? Well, your father said that they don't have any good barbers there. And could you send your best barber? Meanwhile, the barber, he's got the scissors, he's shivering and he's shaking. He says, well, my best barber is right here. And he looked at him, would you like to make that sacrifice? Make the sacrifice. Boom. Landed on the ground, he fainted, and we still don't know if he ever recovered. The main point is that when you use negative ways to try to solve a problem, it generally flies back at you or it boomerangs. Better to take positive action in order to solve our difficulties. Take guidance from senior devotees. Take guidance from Prabhupada's books. Take guidance from Lord Sri Krishna, all his verses, and everyone will be wonderfully uplifted, elated, and become truly happy. So I thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions? I will take some questions if you have them. Anything that's any doubt that I've put in? No? Then everyone can take prasadam, and I wish you well, and I look forward to your next, this coming week, to be your most ecstatic, most blissful, most peaceful, most secure week that you ever had. Hare Krishna.